Okay, we're back for episode 89 of Powers and Principalities. How you doing, Joe?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. We agreed tonight to talk about this term, globo homo. Globo homo. It's a word used to describe a globalized, homogenized culture. Pushed by, large corporations, politicians of various sorts, neoconservatives, leftists, activists. The culture includes sort of a metropolitan ideal such as diversity, homosexuality, sexual degeneracy, color blindness in regard to race, egalitarianism, worship of mammon, money, the erasure of the doing away of distinct individual cultures. It's sort of enforced through a global homo corporatocracy, which has been described as a unholy union of a rootless, deracinated corporate, bigwigs, academicians, and also bureaucrats. Its primary objectives are, of course, making lots of money, endless saturation of the airwaves of sort of neoliberal propaganda. And of course, the silencing of all dissent from their opinion or their rule. I ran across this article. This was an outfit called VJM Publishing. It's out of New Zealand, and I thought it was an excellent summation of what global homo is. So, if you bear with me, I'll just instead of coming up with something myself, I figure I'd just copy it.
Sure.
Why do all the work?
But,
so it's at VJM Publishing. Internet dwellers will have found themselves more and more frequently encountering the word globo homo. The first component is globo. This refers to global because globo homo is a strategy deliberately carried out by globalists in particular. Globo homo is very much a worldwide phenomenon, in the sense that it seeks to expand its reach into every corner of the planet and intends to destroy all local cultures, whether they be national, provincial, city, town, village, or family. These local cultures must be destroyed so that people have no resistance to the propaganda of the globalists. This globalist component is very much pro-capitalist and very much anti-working class. The globalist element is the same element comprised mostly of international bankers and the like that has been responsible for the destruction of the Western working class in pursuit of cheap labor and fat profits over the past 30 years. The second component is homo. What this refers to is the fact that people pushing the global homo ideology are almost never people with healthy families, and they are always promoting behaviors that are not compatible with the function of healthy families. Inevitably, there is some kind of sexual dysfunction among the people who cheer for global homo. It isn't simply a matter of homosexuality, but also a curious reluctance to have children, despite occupying leadership positions that will have consequences for all children for decades to come. An essential part of the homo element is that people are induced to either not have families or to hate the families that they do have. The point of this is to further destroy the family unit for the sake of facilitating the indoctrination of people with new ideologies. In combination, these qualities give us global homo. What this amounts to is a globalized degeneracy pushed by the corporate media and intended to glorify materialism and mindless consumption. This is primarily achieved by destroying all natural social bonds and replacing them with a desire for either materialist gain or raw sensual pleasure. It is reminiscent of the ideology pushed by the ruling class of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, who have enslaved the population by way of totally satisfying their base animalistic cravings. One of the most telling signs of global homo are actions taken in support of increasing the refugee quota. Bringing in more refugees is the global homo dream. Not only does it increase the supply of cheap labor, but it also destroys the natural bonds of solidarity that are held by people in the target locale. This makes it harder for those people to organize for the sake of resisting further globalist capitalist predation. Part of global homo is being given rights to do things that you don't even want to do or never would, like marry another man, but losing your rights to do things that every normal person wants to do and used to be considered normal, like raise a family on one income. The corporate media works hard to create the impression that things are better than ever the corporate media works hard to create impression that things are better than ever before because the scourge of homophobia is finally overcome, but the truth is the life is getting much worse by all meaningful measures. In summary, global homo can be thought of as a manufactured culture that expands into cultural space like a cancer, destroying all genuine diversity and replacing it with a corporate Disneyland for the sake of maximizing profits and control, both of which are held by an international class with loyalties to no land and to no people. Its prevalence is one of the main reasons why people all over the West feel like their actual quality of life is decreasing, despite all obvious material and technological progress. So I thought that was a pretty good summation of global homo. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like California. I mean, that's a very good summation. And I kind of like the term, and I hope it becomes popular because it does challenge the people who listen to it, hear it, to have an opinion about both globalism and homosexuality. You know, because they are, you know, both of those things are sort of the avant-garde of the new world order. And so often, you know, Western walking dead normies don't even have an opinion about those things. And if the, and that phrase, at least, you know, to understand it, you have to at least recognize that these things are concepts. You know, the simple fact is that both of the aspects of it, the globalism and the, you know, kind of new world order sexuality are, you know, basically aspects of the slave state. The globalism is, you know, I mean, it's just, it's transparent. I mean, how many people actually benefit from it? I mean, if you look at the global effect in the United States, I mean, it's completely, or it's in the process of destroying the middle class, you know. So globalism only benefits either extremely poor people who are not in your country and related to you, or extremely wealthy people who own the companies and can get cheap labor and then have access to, you know, markets throughout the world that they can sell their widgets in. And the other aspect of it, I mean, the sexuality is obviously the sexuality that is promoted by the media, by the cultural Marxists in charge of our political world. I mean, that sexuality clearly is designed to end the family, right? I mean, it's just the gay disco is not going to produce you know, a middle class, you know, made up of, you know, kind of families and people with strong connections. And so they're just easier to control. And so that's, you know, what we're facing with global homo. It's a real thing. I mean, it's a term that actually describes something. And, you know, in the last couple of months, I've noticed that there has been an enormous increase in the media that I see of mixed race couples with children. I mean, this is, you know, just a very, very constant image that the advertising in the American media is putting out.
Even normies are commenting on this, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, and so you, right. Well, that's right. And so, and I've also seen quite a few. You know, kind of the homosexual sort of films, and I just think that they're trying to normalize that as best they can. And you know, the point that they're trying, what is in back of this is that if they can actually, you know, because they are creating homosexuals with, you know, the toxicity and with the culture. You know, yeah. They're physically creating them, you know, with the plastics and, you know. And then once they have done this and, you know, you want to stand up and say, you know, our sexuality is being attacked and basically there is a weaponized group, the homosexuals, that has been basically designed, you know, to attack politically aspects of culture that are worrisome to the oligarchs, the homosexual can simply stand there in human dignity and basically say, this really hurts my feelings. And, he or she has a point, right? I mean, it does. It's just a terrible thing to have one's very sexuality and their kind of cultural orientation, to use an expression, described as something that was artificially created as a weapon, without your consent. It would just be really hard to address someone who is basically having such a, what he would or she would experience as such a personal attack. And it's even more the case with children who are of racially mixed couples, the mixed race kids, because, I mean, in that instance, it's, whereas at least with homosexuality, you can appeal to some kind of biological standard that isn't being met by this group, we'll get into that later. But with someone who's born into a mixed race family, I mean, good heavens, you try to talk about how they are deliberately blending the races to create a slave class. How can a person like that respond to such an idea? The normal ego would just fight it just tooth and nail. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the idea is they don't really need to create too large a fraction of such people, maybe 3, 5, 10% of the total birth population. And then they know this will ossify the trend. You can never go back. You see, once you have enough of them so that they are basically have both a political and a moral position. And so that's why I think they're trying so hard. This is what my point is that the global homo, the acceleration of global homo is because they're really trying to get to sort of a moral and intellectual tipping point where the defense of the attack is just the humans that have been created by their techniques.
Yeah, your point about the mixed race, it is difficult because if you point out the problems of such, couplings with the offspring having, lack of identity, psychological problems, these things, you seem to be saying that somehow this person is somehow deficient as a human being. And, so naturally they're going to recoil and be defensive. And that's not what we're saying, but there's a reason why it's being pushed. And it's being pushed because they want people with no fixed identity or solid, ethnic roots. But I do find it interesting that the big push for mixed racing, it just obviously the social engineering and psychological warfare is obvious. I mentioned that even like people don't even put much thought to it or saying what's going on here. This is getting a little ridiculous. Then they get defensive because for the very thing. Then if you acknowledge it, then what are you, a racist? Right. But it's funny thing is it's how they can push this, and this is very they have a the people that do these things, and what I mean by the social engineers, the psychological warriors, they work in the 5 or 6 major advertising firms that control all advertising. There are about 6 companies, I think, 5 or 6. I think 5 of them are Jewish owned. Just, but anyway, if you create a marketing trend or a meme in your commercials or TV shows that emasculate and humiliate and degrade the white male, European male, in popular entertainment, music, commercials, and these things, at the same time you start to promote things like rap music, rap culture, the idea of being colored as cool, exotic, it's sort of edgy. A sizable percentage of the girls women tend to seek status for various reasons, to secure resources, basically. But basically, they tend to be attracted to status. So if you lower the status of the white male and artificially raise the status of people of color, to say, you're going to increase the amount of women who decide to couple with them. And that's being done, and that's why it's so promoted in the music. That's why when I mentioned in Germany, they had, the public health service there in Germany, the government department was issuing brochures with art instructing German women with blonde hair how to have sex with newcomers who are different, significantly darker, the immigrant population. And so
Yeah.
I mean, it's overt. I mean, it's
Yeah,
a
you showed that in the video that accompanied the discussion we had. You had that the actual image, and it was just shocking, And it was because it wasn't. I mean, you think about that image in 1950. I mean, first of all, the image is completely pornographic. It's a very physically, accurate depiction of coupling. And then secondly, it isn't even hidden as propaganda. It's just a government promotion of a way to destroy the German ethnicity.
Yeah, I was listening to a short video on YouTube today. In Germany, there's a magazine called Healthy Families or something. I'm not sure how it translates, but there's an article that cites that what to look for in families that might be troublesome. And the families are tend to have the kids with blonde hair. Girls have meticulously braided hair, long dresses. The families get along, and the parents seek community. This is particularly a problem in rural areas in Germany.
It's the
And
authoritarian personality.
that's what it is. I'm thinking this is I'm thinking this is a problem, and this is a problem. And it turns out it's funded by this foundation or a NGO that's been promoting this. And they some of its directors date back to the Stasi. And some of your usual suspects,
Soros and
there's, yeah,
all
so,
that kind of stuff. Sure, I mean. So there it is. I mean, it's like in the discussion we had last week, even though it was actually yesterday, through the miracle of tape recording, we talked about Tucker Carlson not seeing the confrontation between the Indian and the Black Israelite nation with the white Catholic kids as having to do with race, right? Just doesn't have to do with race, So,
I mean, the whole thing was concocted to make a racial issue out of
exactly,
it.
but it's one where basically the white male is made impotent, and so, well, I mean, I would just say that it is clear enough now, to me, I mean, God only knows what to.
Well, this is what it is. I mean, I think global homo, the agenda, that is also things like abortion. And it's interesting that issue with with Phillips and Salmon, it covered up the whole thing. There was this huge rally protesting abortion in D.C. That was the March for Life. And this is the same week that Governor Cuomo in New York signed basically a law legalizing infanticide, and they're all patting the legislature up there. They're patting themselves on the back for that. They actually had a pink. They bathed the One World Trade Center in pink to celebrate this thing. And we
Oh,
also had the governor here in Virginia talk about how infanticide should be legalized or how it would be done in an ethically moral way. Okay, fine.
a second state also basically, I forget which state it was, but a second state just a couple of days ago also,
Was it Rhode Island?
I think maybe Rhode Island,
But
authorized.
here's the funny thing is that then the day later, and now it became sort of a kind of an uproar here in Virginia, not in the mainstream press though. There's a collective yawn about it. But then Northam, our governor, gets in trouble because apparently this picture emerges from 35 years ago in his college yearbook where either he's dressed as a Klansman or he's wearing blackface, and it is for this that he's being called to step down and resign, and not for his advocacy of infanticide. So that's the priorities we have now.
And so the cultural Marxists are just, full throttle at this point. And okay, so they have steadily debased culture, right? And they have steadily been able to make the white male, the European male, look more and more impotent, and have, you know, make him financially destitute. And so, you know, things are grim. This is a very tough time. It's a time when we really have to basically try to find a way to keep our communities together, and to spread the word that global homo is actually just ethnic warfare, right? Because if you look at the criticism of the blonde, families in Germany that you described, I mean, that is literally the authoritarian personality. There is just no question that concept comes right out of the authoritarian personality, which was the pseudo-psychological science that was created by the American Jewish Committee using the Frankfurt School, to the cultural Marxists, to create, which really led directly to the sex, drugs, and rock and roll counterculture. That was one of the things that was going to come forward. And so, but it was also, it found a way to, you know, make, you know, to accuse as being neurotic, any kind of ethnic pride. They actually had a scale that would measure this. And so this was all done after World War II. And the idea was that now that, the Nazi Party has been exposed as insane and anti-Semitic, we have to look deep into, you know, the neurosis, this structural neurosis with the white males. And that's why they brought in Ewan Cameron to the analysis. Of course, later it was found that Cameron was doing, human experimentation with putting women into coma for months and giving them electroshock and LSD to void their soul. So he was a complete maniac and a psychopath, and had obviously been deliberately picked. And so this is just a real clear piece of evidence that the whole World War II narrative is fake, is a psychological meme that's just part of what we're facing today. It's just part of it. It's a very powerful part of it. And so, you know, the juxtaposition is basically Hitler on one side and the global homo on the other, you know, but this is just the narrative they've been able to fool us with. You know, the fact is that these are all of these things are just elements of basically racial destruction and the creation of a slave state. And, you know, getting back to the children of the mixed race couples, it, as hard as it is, and I mentioned this in other shows, you simply have to go forward with the truth. You can't just let, you know, this natural sympathy for these individuals. And, you know, it's funny. I was having a talk with a gay couple, males, friends like these guys. And, we didn't quite get to this point. But I think if the conversation had gone on much longer, we would have. Where I would have just said, look, you know, I would have said there's a really good chance that your sexuality was created as weaponized, basically chemicals and culture to push you into a position of a political impotence for your whole race.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what we didn't. I didn't quite get there, but. You know, the conversation broke up, but that's where it would have gone. And even though these guys are great, you know, individually, you know, you just think these people are really top notch guys. The fact is, this is just a truth. You know, you can't really get around it. And so you have to both face that intimidation and all, not just intimidation, but empathy. Because, you know, when you're imagine like you're in a lecture hall and this subject comes up and you're called on to describe the position of how, you know, mixed race couples and their children are being used to create a slave state. And just imagine that sitting in the front row is like a young man who is half black, half white.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there it is. But you have to go forward. You just have to say, with all apologies and with all awareness of your humanity, you have to remember that you weren't created. The cultural forces that were put in deliberate motion and were, you know, weaponized with psychological science to create you are not trying to create a better world. They're creating a slave state. And so this is why you really should try to help us, right? And not just have the immediate ego response of, you know, you're a hateful person because you're basically attacking my humanity.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Kudinov-Cleary plan was, hatched in the 1920s or 30s. And
yeah.
It was done to create a sort of a atomized, weak, you know, underclass that could be easily ruled. And so, the plans were laid out not for the betterment, not for the kumbaya, everyone getting together and wonderful diversity, these things. No, anything, it's an erasure of diversity because you want everyone to blend. And instead of a multicolor thing, you get like a gray blob, you know. So it's the exact opposite.
We talked last week, yeah.
Yeah.
Which was yesterday.
Yeah.
We talked about... I see it was so long ago, I forgot my point.
Well, one thing that's interesting is how this is being pushed, though. Isn't just, you know, this isn't government agencies for the most part. This is it's a corporatocracy. When I read that, what is the global homo? It's primarily being implemented through the corporations, NGOs too, which are, you know, are just proxies for various oligarchic interests, usually going into other countries. But we have NGOs that also operate domestically as well. They're just called think tanks and foundations. But anyway, when I mentioned, you know, like only a handful of advertising, but five or six control all the advertising. They'll control what's being pushed in these things. And you watch a commercial, and you can go on YouTube, and they'll have a video that provides like a string of these commercials. And I think Mark Dice had one. It's a, you know, trying to do diversity too hard. It's kind of funny because some of these things are just an insult to your sensibilities, an insult to your intelligence. It's, you know, there's one ad where it's a boy scout in quotes for Nestle Crunch, and it's really a girl named Fatima, and she's wearing a hijab, and she likes Nestle Crunch. You know, it's like, what? Of course, we're all familiar with the latest Gillette ad, which I think they anticipated it would get the reaction they wanted. I think they expected it. And how can you not? But just the, you know, the absurdity of these ads, they have no bearing on any relation to reality, by the way, right? I mean, it's like...
Well, we are trying to sell a product.
Or selling a product, for that matter. Dove soap. What was it? Dove?
Yeah.
One of the Super Bowls. They had a couple there, which it was a transgendered man with a woman and a baby. So it was a man acting like a woman who's still, you know, he's a man, dresses like a woman, they have a baby, and this is for Dove soap.
Oh.
You know, why, yeah. IKEA having gay, this doesn't move products, it's pushing an agenda. And they don't care about the bottom line anymore, because like I said, these corporations are so... They're international. I don't even think they even operate on the same.
They're fake. I've said this many times. My position is like Amazon, Microsoft. You know, they're not real. They aren't there. You know, I mean, they money goes through them. Products are created and sold, but the real purpose is to create control.
Yeah, it's called woke. I heard it, another term is woke capital, and that's basically it's about the sort of the culture that's being promoted by corporations, primarily through things like social media, LinkedIn, and also human resource departments, their policies, how they can carry out this revolution without the benefit of any legislation. It's similar to the point that Ian Michael Jones made in his book, John Caldwell Kroll and the Cultural Revolution, about the power of the foundations, how they comprise the secret government, how the foundations would dole out largesse to think tanks and to universities to promote studies. They'd also be involved in promoting certain memes in the media to carry out a culture revolution to ultimately have effect on governmental policy. And but it kind of gave the impression of sort of a scientific thing. You know, this was how could so many scientists be wrong? And this was sort of consensus opinion. It turns out it was all controlled from the center because they're promoting this culture revolution. A good example of this was Kinsey's studies, right? It was
sure,
you know, it was supposedly scientific, right? And so you had the air, you know, the aura of science behind it, and men in white coats and these things. It's like four out of five dentists you recommend.
Yeah, right. I think that in general, the motivation that is given to the public for this cultural evil is often that it's greed. You know, they're trying to, for some reason, they want to expand their market. It's like with vaccines, right?
Yeah.
This is greed. Well, I just think that's just the narrative. And it kind of works, you know, in another way with fake corporations like Amazon, with the idea of like Amazon is, going to be very profitable in the future. It doesn't really matter if it is or not. And money is, because they control the Federal Reserve, money is really not something that, you know, they have to worry about. Our need in any other way other than to use it to basically set up this stratified slave state. And in the definition that you read, which was really good, I thought, about Global Homo, you know, the guy mentioned Huxley's Brave New World. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this, people need to relook at that book. It was, a lot of Americans read it in high school, mandatory, that no one really explained it to people as to what it is. But, we have to look at it now with the idea that Huxley worked with MK Ultra, and that Huxley was an associate, close ally of the Rothschilds. And when you look at it in that light, then suddenly you can see, you know, there's no warning being given. This is really the world that, they're creating. And what you're looking at is the Epsilons and the Deltas, the Epsilons, and stratification. You know, they're having as they create this new world order, the categories can, there is no social mobility, I mentioned last week the conversation I had with the Latino guy, he was thinking that there was something really beneficial through the forced integration that his people has been benefited from, and he identified himself, you know, as a Latino. And my point back to him was, well, you know, do you think 9/11 was an inside job? Because if you do, you have to, that's a clear, bright red line between your race and any political power whatsoever, you see, because the people who could create such an event, they have power. They have control of the media. They have control of the government. They also have the moral perspective to kill thousands of people, right? So they have a kind of moral power in that they're just completely bloodthirsty and without any kind of, you know, normal human empathy as a restraint. So this is what, you know, you have to look at in terms of really what all of the cultural Marxism, all of the different aspects of it, how has it really created power for the people who they think they're benefiting from it?
Yeah, there was a two people have thrown their hat into the presidential ring in the Democratic Party. One is Kamala Harris is her name?
Yeah.
And the other one's Cory Booker, the former mayor of Newark and the senator from New Jersey. And they're both, you know, push, obviously they're using the race card. But if you look at them, yeah, okay, they're supposed to represent minorities, blacks, and they're going to shake up the system because of where they come from. But they're just people, they're just people of the system. If you look at Cory Booker's, his policy positions, he's no threat at all. He supports abortion on demand. He supports, you know, Israel, you know, these well, things.
But he's what used to be called an Uncle Tom.
Yeah, it's like same with Barack Obama, right?
Puppet, and he is being promoted just because he is so, I hate to say it, but because he's so stupid that he obviously doesn't have any chance to win, but it just creates this idea of a diverse democracy that everyone can get in. And they know that he is so stupid, he's never going to bring up any real issues, right?
Yeah. And Kamala Harris, I think, is a prosecutor who is waging the false drug war, right?
System of, you know, she's a creature of the system. And I don't know that much about her, but I would just say that, look, she's a mixed race woman. She had an affair with Willie Brown, the California kind of just, you know, cesspool oligarch black. He's this black guy in California, kind of a, power player.
Wasn't he the mayor of San Francisco at one time?
At one point, he's the mayor of San Francisco. Yeah. And anyway, he's just, you know, I mean, he's sort of like a one up from the Washington, D.C. mayor, you know, that, you know, had the tape where he said, the bitch set me up. Remember, who was that guy?
Marion Barry, yeah.
Yeah, that. So Brown has kind of been, comes from the same.
By the way, he got reelected after that.
So. Of course. I mean, yeah, with those qualifications, I mean, you can't go wrong. But anyway, so I mean, the point is, look, you know, we have 911. It's just this useful Swiss Army knife of kind of, you know, where reality is. And you just tell someone like this, look, you were not in the crowd making this, event occur. So therefore, you don't have any power at all. You know, you have a paycheck as a politician. You get to go to meetings and, people pretend to pay attention to, you know, your dribbling and stuff. You really don't have any kind of, you know, economic agenda. That is just ludicrous. You have some ambition and are being, I think someone like that would be, you know, they would have, handlers and things trying to stroke her ego or whatever to get her to, you know, to do what they want her to do or however they achieve it. But the idea of her representing any kind of political power or taking her people, right, whoever she thinks she's representing, women, blacks, I don't know, to any more political power, Tim, it's on its face ludicrous because she's not representing anyone who has any access to the group that created 911, the group that creates the foreign policy, the group that creates all of these, foundations, you know, you were talking about. All of the power, she is completely on the outside looking in and doesn't have a clue as even how the power functions, let alone how she could ever acquire any of that. And so she is, you know, a null and void candidate for people wanting to have any real political change. I mean, she's a classic, in my opinion, globo homo creature, right? She has ego, she has media stature, and she has absolutely nothing to do with political power, nothing.
Yeah, and what, of course, for those people who, perhaps on the right, who cheer, you know, the U.S. military, the U.S. Yeah. military is one of the big promoters of globo homo. You know, because everywhere they go, when they invade a country, occupy a country, or even the CIA, when it gets involved, or American-backed NGOs, well, USAID and National Network for Democracy, that's basically CIA, really. But they're involved in spreading global homo in places like, you know, Ukraine, trying to undermine the traditional society there. I just finished an article by E. Michael Jones about what happened in Germany right after World War II when they decided to scrap the Morgenthau Plan and rebuild West Germany. And they instituted the currency reforms and people suddenly had money to spend. And they started importing pornography into the country. And all the publications in Germany had to get the approval by a rabbi in New York City. And I'm not kidding.
No, I know. I'm actually familiar with this. Yeah.
And they ushered in, you know, particularly in the 60s, they started, it's called the school house reports or something. These films, soft pornography, and they kind of drenched the culture in this stuff for the very reason, like what I said earlier about that one video I saw earlier today about, you know, the article about the fam. It's the same. It's been going on for decades in Germany to demoralize and depopulate Germany.
Oh, yeah. So basically, you know, you just have, a long standing process by a particular ethnicity that wanted power. Took an avenue of trying to get into the political class. And once it did, you know, with Freemasonry, which was another, you know, basic aspect of the struggle, then they were able to start wiping out the ethnicities physically with wars, and also, in terms of any kind of psychological power with, you know, the authoritarian personality, pseudoscience, and pornography,
yes,
which was, of course, the Eros that they had described in that. And so it's just what you're looking at, what we think of as culture or even historical narrative, you know, is really just ethnic warfare. It's really, there's no other honest way to describe it, you know.
Yeah, what E. Michael Jones calls the gay disco, you don't have to be a homosexual to behave like a homosexual. What it means by that is people assume the sexual patterns of homosexuals, meaningless, episodic sexual relationships, no family, no bonding, no community. So you're an atomized individual. You're a perfect subject for the New World Order because you have no roots in the past. So you're kind of aimless in the present. Therefore, you're not looking towards the future. You're not worried about posterity. In the end, we're all dead. That type of attitude. And that's what they're trying to promote with the global homo agenda.
I'm sorry. It's very interesting to me because if you just look at the morphology of the individual, if you look at like the pornographic male or the single mom, you know, you go, well, you guys are European. You have this basically ancient tradition, uninterrupted, which has a social context to it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, European social structure, right? And this is what produced you. This is what you come from. And yet here, you're simply going to throw it all away, right? Without ever considering that perhaps there was a lot of meaning and value and strength in the social aspect that accompanied the genetic lineage that you come from. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the discussion of like, well, if we do this, if we go to the disco, if we have meaningless sex for 20 years and then, you know, end up as a single male in a bar, you know, where was the discussion of like, oh, is that going to be a quality of life? What was given up, you know, when you entered into the pornographic male world? And it's the same thing I would say, obviously, could be said to, the single mom.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, you made this decision to basically raise the child on your own using the assistance of the state. Where was the discussion of what would be given up when you decided that you really didn't need a man in your life? You see, we never had that discussion. And this, of course, shows that this was basically warfare, because these are the most precious aspects of our tradition, right? Of our the tradition that created us, and there had to have been really valuable things inside it, obviously. And so there should have been some kind of discussion. When Marcuse brought out Eros and Civilization, there should have been, you know, some meaningful discussion about, well, what are you going to give up if you just enter into a world where there is blurred ethnicity, blurred sexuality, and blurred morality? What are you losing? And there wasn't. I mean, I was there, and I'm telling you, the universities and the media just promoted these things. I mean, look at the Life magazine coverage of Woodstock,
mm-hmm.
you know. So There was never any discussion. And now, 75 years later, whatever it is, we have examples of the tragedy and of what was lost, because there's so many, I think, single moms whose lives are miserable. And of course, the pornographic male can now testify to what his existence is like in his 60s and 50s, right?
Yeah, and the millennials who come from these broken homes, they're almost like they're born, they become damaged goods overnight because of the type of media they're subjected to. And I mean, they're so alienated, from this, that they often don't even recognize that, you know, like I said, a young girl gets pregnant, she's single, she's being a single mother, she doesn't even recognize the fact that she's in trouble anymore.
Right.
You know, what's the time you were in trouble?
Well, and you were in trouble because there was, you were at risk of losing something of great value. Yeah. You know, they characterized how they were, how women who became pregnant out of wedlock were ostracized as a kind of, draconian fascism, right? But the fact is, it actually was part of what kept families being created. And when you lose families, you lose a tremendous amount more psychologically than the trauma that was done to the individual women who were, pointed out that this was a poor moral decision that they made.
Yeah, you can't lament child abuse, poverty, neglect, and then say, well, we can't be critical of single motherhood, because that produces that in far higher rates than otherwise would be the case, which is why, I mean, this is, practical reason or morality here at play. We know that there are consequences for these things, and children need an environment they can be nurtured and raised, and that can only be provided for, in a two-parent family. There's a mother and a father, and indeed a family around. That's another thing.
And
the woman, nuclear family was, not just a nuclear
family.
It's
what they lost. It isn't just that the statistics show that it's, catastrophic for everyone who's involved in a destroyed family. But the individuals lost the real value of life.
Goes back to that German magazine. It's the threat are well-ordered, well-behaved, well-dressed children, girls in long dresses and braided hair. That's the threat. And have you ever seen the movie Pleasantville?
I'm not sure. I hope not.
Made in the late 90s. And it's a story where a brother and a sister kind of lived in a dysfunctional home. I think it's a divorced mother, lived with a divorced mother. I've seen parts of it, but I know enough of it. And every day he comes home from school and watches reruns of a show called Pleasantville. It's a kind of a fictitious 50s sitcom, like Leave It to Beaver or Father Knows Best. And miraculously, I think some guy, I think it was an Asian TV repairman, hands him a magic remote control, and they get transported into the show as if it's reality back in the 1950s. And it's in black and white. And the community is all white, of course, because this is 1950s America. But the community is no crime. Everyone's happy, well-ordered, and all that. But the girl gets sucked back, is a feminist. She's a radical. The movie also contrasts 90s teenagers from 50s teenagers. And, somehow suggests that being in the 90s were cooler because they're freer, more debased. And the girl, being the feminist, interjects free love into the community. And as people have illicit sex, they fornicate, they get color. And they become colored people. And the mother in the show ends up, being liberated, having an affair with a guy in town who owns the malt shop, who's also into modern art. And the town sort of becomes liberalized. That's what the show's about. And that's sort of what they're trying to say happens when you're with free love. You just want to have fun, and they didn't see, I guess you could show
the quality of life goes up so much because, you're getting to have fornication all the time. And this is the defining aspect of your being, And so all of these other things, the value of being a parent, the relationship to children.
Well, the funny thing is,
forget about that. That's not really fun.
I hate to tell people, but this was the baby boom. And in order for there to be a baby boom, people were having lots of sex.
You know, I wanted to...
but it was within marriage, so it wasn't, you know...
One thing I saw, I didn't see Pleasantville, which just sounds god-awful, but I saw this show, one-man show that Bruce Springsteen put on. And, you know, Springsteen is kind of an interesting character. He's hard, really, to pin down as a
Jurassic New World Catholic,
order, you know, New World Order creature, but I think he is. I'm pretty sure that.
Well, a few years ago, he gets canceled a concert in North Carolina because of the transgendered bathroom thing.
Yeah. So I mean, but I think but it's because so he was sort of justifying his life and explaining it in this one man show. It wasn't just his songs he was talking about. And basically he was saying that, you know, he was kind of a revolutionary because people wanted more freedom. They wanted, you know, more love and they wanted more sex. And, you know, I kind of thought, and, you know, maybe I'm kind of reading too much in, but I kind of thought that the way he said it indicated that he was guilty, that he actually knew it, that he had been part of a debasing, assault. And that because, I mean, you know, I mean, of course, he has to kind of justify his life, I suppose, even if he isn't, agent.
Reportedly, he dumped his first wife because she didn't want children, and he's stayed married since then. So I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I know nothing about him. I listened to a few of his songs, don't know much about him, but I did see this part of his one man show. And I thought, you know, I just wonder, is he just outright lying? Because I don't think that it's not a true thing. It wasn't like people wanted more sex in the 50s. This is just not true. If you look at how sexuality was developed, it was artificially stimulated to take it outside of marriage. People in the 50s were looking for a woman to fall in love with.
Yeah.
Remember those days? I mean, it was just a completely different thing, but it wasn't the idea of...
It wasn't Tinder?
There wasn't the idea of, like, I need more sex partners. The idea was, I need the right sex partner.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that I need more sex. It was I need really the right sex. I need like, real... You know, the kind of sex that actually can function inside of a marriage, you know, and so this is like someone like Springsteen's kind of interesting. I mean, we could study him, I suppose, and try to come to a more definitive opinion about him. But I would just say on his face that he's dirty, and that that you don't have meteoric kind of careers. He may have been like more talented, I think, in his songs, the ones I've heard, than Aerosmith or some, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he was the lyrics, particularly his early stuff, the lyrics and all that.
It's like, when you think of Marcuse as kind of someone who organized the counterculture and the ethnic warfare, I mean, Springsteen fits right in. You see what I mean?
He was born 1949, so he was, you know, right in there, right?
Yeah, that was a bad year.
In the scene. He was in the scene.
That's where I was born.
Yeah. But I mean, that's it. You're at the ground zero of the cultural.
Yes, that's right. We got to see the whole thing. We didn't really know. Unfortunately, there wasn't an alt media at that time. And so now the question is it too late? Are we going to be able to, with the information revolution that's going on, get the word out to enough people in time to, you know, basically, organize a counter assault or a resistance of some kind? Because, you know, if they were taking us to Disneyland, you know, it would be one thing, but it may look like Disneyland on the outside, but once you get inside, it's Auschwitz, right?
Yeah.
Except it's the real one, not the fake one. It's the final solution, and that is really what's going on. So, global homo. I'm glad the term is out there, and it's a way for people to kind of organize their minds so they can, you know, be alert to what's influencing them.
The before we close it out, I thought I'd read this. E. Michael Jones wrote in Libido Dominandi.
Yeah.
And let's see here. Pornography is closely bound up with technology, specifically reproduction and transmission of images. Just as the history of pornography is one of progress, technological, not moral progress, of course, so the exploitation of compulsion has been explored in more and more explicit form during the past 100 years of this revolutionary age. What began as the bondage of sin eventually became financial control, and what became accepted as a financial transaction has been forged into a form of political control. Sexual revolution is contemporaneous with the political revolution of the sort that began in France in 1789. This means we are not talking about sexual vice when we use the term sexual revolution as much as the rationalization of sexual vice, followed by the financial exploitation of sexual vice, followed by the political mobilization of something as a form of control. My point here is that the current regime knows this and exploits the situation to its own advantage. In other words, sexual freedom is really a form of social control. What we're really talking about is a Gnostic system of two truths. The exoteric truth, the one propagated by the regime through advertising, sex education, Hollywood films, the university system. The truth, in other words, for general consumption, is that sexual liberation is freedom. The esoteric truth, the one that informs the operations manual of the regime, in other words, the people who benefit from liberty, is the exact opposite, namely that sexual liberation is a form of control, a way of maintaining the regime in power by exploiting the passions of the naive who identify with their passions as if they were their own and identify with the regime, which ostensibly enables them to gratify their passions. People who succumb to their disordered passions are then given rationalizations of the sort that clog the web pages on the internet and are thereby molded into a powerful political force by those who are most expert in manipulating the flow of imagery and rationalization. If the universe was a machine whose prime force was gravity, society was a machine as well whose prime force was self-interest in man. Likewise, no longer sacred as was a machine whose engine ran on passion. From there, it was not much of a stretch to understand the man who controlled passion controlled man. John Henry's History of the Sexual Revolution, What Wild Ecstasy, is one more example of Whiggish history, this time Whiggish sexual history. In fact, all histories of sexual liberation are Whiggish. The moral of each piece of their genre is either people everywhere just want to be free, or to give the feminist variant, girls just want to have fun. Henry lays his metaphysical cards on the table at the various points during the book. At the very beginning, he tells us, for example, that this is the way we were from about 1965 on, when the particles of revolt and enlightenment coalesced with the sexual Big Bang. We have here, in other words, a classic enlightenment explanation of everything. The sexual revolution was not a grassroots uprising. It was not the coalescing of particles of revolt and enlightenment. It was rather a decision on the part of the ruling class in France, Russia, Germany, and the United States at various points during the last 200 years to tolerate sexual behavior outside of marriage as a form of insurrection, and then as a form of political control. Heidegger's book is a part of a general mystification on the subject, and not something that will explain things to the unwary. However, it is worthwhile as a classic expression of how sexual liberation has worked as a form of political control in this country over the past 32 years. Bernard Berelson, who worked for the Rockefellers, was a student of the Enlightenment and put these ideas to work in manipulating the public opinion for them during the 1960s, more specifically in the battle with the Catholic Church over the decriminalization of contraception. Edward Bernays was the nephew of Sigmund Freud and the father of modern advertising. Both were part of the luminous tradition of controlling people through their passions without the knowledge of the person being controlled. And all of the passions, the Luminous makes clear, sexual passions are the most effective when it comes to controlling man. It's kind of long, I'm sorry, but that's why we see global homo.
Yeah, I mean, well said, I mean, well written, but it's just, I think that you need to, you know, he talks about the people in power, and I think that that's not the clearest way to describe what's happened. It wasn't just the people in power. I mean, what you're really talking about is following Palmerston Zoo, the Freemason and crypto-Jew takeover of European political power. Then you had in all of those countries, new cultural programs basically to weaken Europeans. I mean, like the most obvious would just be Grigor Lukács, you know, with Hungarian Soviet and this stuff, you know. But this is also going to pop up in the United States and everywhere. And what he's really, so I just think that E. Michael, who, you know, I admire, you know, immensely, I think he would be clearer if he didn't, you know, kind of go vague there and then just stayed with a specific ethnic warfare aspect of it, because I think that would be clearer.
He has pointed out that, you know, at least, article he wrote about Germany, he obviously lays the table. Yeah. It's Jews. And right. Particularly in America, it was Jewish agitation in both on the the West Coast and East Coast that led to the legalization of abortion and the normalization of pornography. Contraception was more of a WASP thing, but anyway, there's obviously an ethnic component here.
But contraception was a Freemason thing. I mean, it's, if you look at, you know, the Masonic influence in it, it's just everywhere. And then there's also Jewish aspects to it. And it's sort of like if you take out those two aspects, you know, there's a few WASPs, but really, are the Rockefellers and Roosevelts WASPs?
Yeah, I know. That's another
thing. I love this DNA test because they don't certainly act in the interests of WASPs. You know, they act as if they are crypto. So, you know, you don't want to criticize E. Michael too hard because he's one of the really clear-minded voices out there, and his writing is you know, influential, and it's just you know, it's great to see the influence that he's having. It's wonderful.
So,
and I would say the same thing about Tim Kelly.
Yeah, I'm a consumer of these things. I don't.
Yeah, you know. So I am going to be gone for, I think, 2 Sundays. So I'm not sure how many shows I won't be available for. I might not miss any of them because I'm going out of the country for a hiking trip. Going on a long hike in the mountains.
Yeah, well, have a safe trip. And, of course, we'll just see when you get out there.
If we can get out there, maybe Wi-Fi will work and we can talk. But there might be a chance that I'll miss a show. But if I do, don't worry. We'll be right back at them as soon as I get back. But I am hoping the technology will work. We'll see.
Okay, great. Enjoy your trip, Joe, and we'll talk to you in a few weeks.
All right, thank you so much, Tim. Talk to you soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.